Administrations come and go, but it seems attempts to undermine the promise in the U.S. Constitution of religious freedom for all continue in ways great and small, no matter who's in charge. Fighting to defend this foundational principle is Interfaith Alliance. And I am happy to have Alliance President Rabbi Jack Moline back with us on State of Belief Radio. I'm always glad when he's here. Welcome back, Jack.
Thank you, Welton. Glad to be here.
You know, I think there's a real risk of complacency right now, at least in this country. The pandemic is becoming less of a paralyzing crisis. At the same time, attempts to control our government is overtly sectarian. Religious terms have receded. But in a way, that can be a dangerous time in need, because a relieved public can lose focus on the ongoing threats that continue to fester. What are your thoughts about that, Jack?
I think there's such a sense of relief now, Welton, that people may find themselves, let's say, experimenting with normalcy. And it's a little too soon to be doing that in terms of health. And a lot of the progress that we've made on issues that required thought and personal restraint may require a little recalibrating now that we're back interacting with each other with a little bit of abandon.
Right. The new Congress has several initiatives that the Alliance endorses. I'd like for you to talk about the legislative work that's going on there.
Well, we are glad that some of the stuff we were working on in years past that was frustrated by an uncooperative legislative branch is now beginning to see the light of day. The No Ban Act, which prevents the president and the government from restricting the free access to the country for reasons of faith or ethnicity, was passed. We've seen legislation that has helped us to lift up equity as a matter of principle for people in different ethnic and religious communities, as well as people of differing orientations. We've seen that legislation advance. And we are definitely hoping that we will see more guarantees that extend constitutional rights explicitly to people regardless of what they believe or whom they love. So we're making some progress, and we're happy about that.
I know that Supreme Court cases are critically important to religious freedom advocates. Are there direct ways Interfaith Alliance engages with judicial issues, or is that more of an awareness-raising process?
Well, we have frequently signed on to amicus briefs in cases that we are concerned about. One example of that is a decision that we're awaiting and that will not be issued before this broadcast airs on the Fulton case, which discusses whether or not, in this particular instance, Catholic foster and adoption agencies can restrict the parentage of wards that are in their care for placement. We, of course, are hoping for an ability for, in this case, the city of Philadelphia, to require any adoption or foster care agency to treat all qualified applicants the same, regardless of their faith or orientation. So we've signed an amicus brief for that. But unless you are arguing the case itself, you have no influence over the court other than to provide supporting materials for the side that you're in favor of. And that's frankly what we've done with all sorts of cases. It gives us a vested interest in the outcome. And I will tell you that I'm prepared at sort of a moment's notice, if we know that this decision is going to be issued, to be down on the steps of the Supreme Court and prepared to answer questions as always is the case when any opinion is issued.
Yeah.
So it's business as usual, except for the pandemic restrictions that will prevent a large gathering in front of the court to wait for this decision to be issued.
Yeah. So what are some of the other priorities that have been really keeping you busy?
Well, in terms of our issues, I will tell you that there are three things that are going on right now that the public should be aware of anyway. Congress has declared the month of May, which is slowly coming to an end, to be both Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month and Jewish Heritage Month. So we have been lifting up our allies in both communities and drawing the attention of our membership and the people who follow us on Facebook and Twitter to activities nationally and in their local communities that celebrate the contributions of those communities to the culture and the history and the society of the United States. So those are two of the things we're concerned about. And of course, we're very focused now on June, which is Pride Month, and lifting up the importance of equity and equality for members of the LGBTQI plus population in the United States, with a particular focus on our concern for the treatment of people who are transgender and among those particularly of children who are transgender. So that's taking a lot of our time and attention, and it's what the people who follow us on social media and through email will hear a lot about in the coming weeks.
You know, Jack, an important part of Interfaith Alliance are the local affiliates, and there are a lot of people who know a lot about the Interfaith Alliance but know virtually nothing about local affiliates that we have in a number of states across this country. Would you talk about why that kind of in-the-field engagement is particularly important in a time when many assaults on religious freedom are happening at the state and local level?
We can say a lot of things on a national level that have general applicability, but it's really the people who are on the ground where laws are being made and enforced on a local level who have the most influence on the quality of life of the people in their communities. Now, I won't embarrass myself by trying to name all of our affiliates, but I can tell you that in places like Des Moines, Iowa, and Denver, Colorado, where two of our strongest and most active affiliates are, Interfaith Alliance of Iowa and Interfaith Alliance of Colorado, the focus on legislation there is intense. And the folks who've been working with those affiliates have not only followed a national agenda for religious freedom, but have also been active voices in building bridges in the interfaith community, as is only possible on a very local level. And then there are places like Fresno, California. The Interfaith Alliance of Central California is one of our strongest advocates of interfaith understanding and collaboration. So in addition to whatever lobbying they might do in Sacramento, which is the state capital, the local community in Fresno and its environs is very active in promoting religious freedom and education about religious freedom in local schools, including universities. We also have a remarkable group in Oklahoma City, the Interfaith Alliance of Oklahoma, which has, again, in addition to promoting our legislative concerns in Tulsa, in the state capital, has been involved in providing inclusive alternatives to what are sometimes exclusive public ceremonies. Most recently, the National Day of Prayer, which has a decidedly right-leaning Christian tinge in the United States in general and in Oklahoma City in particular. Our group hosted an alternative that made room not only for people of differing faiths, but people of no faith at all. Mm-hmm. So these are the kinds of issues that need to be faced by people in the places that they live, not just the places they read about, like we are in inside the Beltway here. We're very grateful for our affiliates. I'll mention one more, and that is one of our newest affiliates in Wyoming. which has hosted a series of remarkable get to know your neighbor webinars. That reminds me of what, when you and I were much younger, we used to do on the Interfaith Alliance board. We would bring people in from different faith communities and have them educate our leadership about more than just what the name of their faith community was, but what its tenets and practices were. And that's what Wyoming is doing for a much more diverse population in that state than you might think actually exists. So good stuff going on in the field. And there could be more affiliates if your listeners were interested in banding together, and we'll help them form.
Well, actually, I want to go right there, because you never know. There may have been a listener or two that found attraction to what you were saying. What does it take to start a new affiliate, and what kind of support does Interfaith Alliance offer for folks taking on that kind of project?
Well, Jay Keller, who is our director of field operations, and Maureen O'Leary, who works with him, she's our full-time staff member who divides her time between policy and field, have an entire program to help people who might want to form an Interfaith Alliance affiliate in their locality. And really all it takes is, let's say for the sake of argument, four people with good intentions and a little bit of time on their hands, willing to reach out in more directions than just to each other. A small group of people with a deep dedication can form the nucleus of an affiliate and then begin to reach out to individuals and communities of faith in their city, in their town, in their locality to form a community within a community that will speak on behalf of faith and freedom for all people.
I'm curious, what do you expect will be the focus of your attention as we head into the summer month?
The Biden administration has been very aggressive in pursuing broad initiatives during these first few months of President Biden's time in office, and has a very, very active faith and community-based infrastructure within the White House. And I think that we will still be supporting the president's initiatives to get as many people vaccinated and therefore immune as possible, so the country can begin to go back to its sense of normalcy. But our staff is meeting actually this week, probably by the time this program is aired, we'll have had our first conversations about what the second half of 2021 is going to mean for us. And I think that we will be focusing again on justice initiatives for various communities. We are extremely concerned about the rise of religious and ethnic antagonisms, both on the right and on the left. People may forget that Interfaith Alliance is a defender of the Constitution, not of a political perspective. That may have been lost a little bit in the last administration. But we're seeing now that communities of faith and communities of differing orientation are being targeted from the right and the left. And we will be talking about what kinds of initiatives we can do to make people more aware of that. Mm-hmm. And we have a series of web broadcasts that we will continue independent of whether we're able to go back to live interaction. We found this to be a very effective way to meet people. We have a series coming up on the Fulton decision when it is announced, and on hate crimes, how to identify them and what to do about them. And I hope that we will set loose early in the fall a second season of the American Purpose webcasts that we did earlier this spring.
Good. Jack, for a moment, I guess I just want to be selfish because I want to divert from this conversation, moved by the deep concern that I have because of the crisis of anti-Semitism that has sickened me and scores of others in recent days. Rapid meanness fills the air and the streets. I know there is so much to talk about here, but I just want you, because I've done this before when it's just you and I talking, but I want to ask you to just say whatever you want to say, what you would say to people like me who hate this anti-Semitic tsunami that's hit us.
Like any kind of bigotry, Welton, whether it's racism or the anti-Asian bigotry that we're seeing or the anti-Muslim bigotry that we've seen, anti-Semitism is something that flourishes only when it goes unchallenged. And honestly, it is not the Jewish community's responsibility to combat anti-Semitism any more than it's the Muslim community's responsibility to combat bigotry against them or the Asian community bigotry against them. It takes people of goodwill, like the fantastic coalition we have in Interfaith Alliance, to stand up for any community in the United States or anywhere in the world that is suffering from behavior associated with prejudice and hatred. I am a rabbi, as you introduced me, and so it sometimes feels to me a little self-serving when I speak out strongly about anti-Semitism the way I have to at this moment because we've had this spike. So what is so important to the Jewish community, I can tell you, is that we have allies like you and allies in other faith communities who will be as outspoken in objecting to this kind of behavior, this kind of hatred and bigotry, as we at Interfaith Alliance are for every other faith community, regardless of whether they are liberal or conservative, whether they're Western or Eastern, or whether they hold any faith beliefs at all. We're all in this together. And just you asking that question, Welton, is a good first step in reminding people that they have the responsibility to protect everybody's faith and freedom in this country.
Thank you. Jack, are you feeling hopeful about the direction our country is now headed in, both on the religious freedom front and on more broad fronts?
You know, that's a fair question because it's the question I ask at the end of each of my American Purpose episodes of somebody else. So now I have to answer it for myself, right? I'm hopeful that as people begin to breathe freely again, and I say that both literally and metaphorically, there will be a renewed ability to focus on on something other than our immediate needs. And I hope that, to use sort of a metaphor here, President Biden's focus on infrastructure in the United States, physical infrastructure, will inspire people to think about our moral infrastructure as well, and to really make it possible for people to begin communicating again, even in disagreement, in ways that they used to in the Bush and Clinton administrations, in a way that we began to lose during the Obama administration and that completely fell apart during the Trump administration. I think that there is a possibility of openness now, despite some of the extremist voices we're still hearing on the right and the left. I think there's an openness now to listening to each other and making some real progress. So I am cautiously optimistic.
Rabbi Jack Moline is president of Interfaith Alliance, defending true religious freedom for all. Jack, thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Be well, Welton, and all of our listeners as well.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift as we celebrate 15 years of continuous broadcasting. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, and take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week. one person for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.